This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
What the fuck?
Bismillah, alhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salam ala rasulillah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another episode of What the Fiqh with your host, Brother Bona Muhammad. And I'm joined again today with a very special friend of mine. Everyone I bring on, I have some type of connection to. Yeah. And people who I've known for many years, or people who I've worked with or done events with in the past. And our guest today, Brother Abdullah Bastami, is a great example of that. We actually toured together in Sweden.
That's a long, yeah.
This was probably nine years ago. Yeah, 9 years ago today. And that was while you were parts of a group, an Nasheed group called Fursan.
Yeah, so we were an African drumming group. Mm-hmm. And we used to sing and rap. And at that moment, there was a lot of Nasheed singers. So when people saw three guys drumming and just making a lot of noise, they're like, yo, this is different.
Yeah. You know? And you were very different.
Yeah.
And it was, and I always respected you know, your approach to things. You're a very easygoing guy, very laid back guy.
Maybe that's
a Sudanese blood. I was gonna say Sudanese people generally are very laid back. Yeah, you know. Give me a bit of insight for people who don't know you, for people maybe that aren't as familiar with you. Give me an insight into, firstly, how you got into the arts.
Okay.
Up until that point, you know, I knew you in that light, but what brought you into that field as an artist?
Okay, so basically, I was not creative at all. When I was
a little bit closer.
So when I was in school and in college, I wasn't creative at all. I just, you know, living at home, my parents were like, no, haram, you can't be doing this sort of stuff. Because creativity, you know, for the most, you know, Muslims, we didn't get into that sort of stuff. I went to university, I moved away from home, I lived with some, you know, some crazy dudes and a few rappers and poets. And then I got involved in this poetic collective called Artistic Souls.
Okay.
And there was about 50 people. Mm-hmm. In that group, I was the only Muslim guy.
Wow. And this is based in Birmingham. Okay.
Yeah. So then, you know, I enjoyed myself. We did some theater, we toured the UK, and then this Pakistani brother joined the group. And I was like, hey, you're one of us.
There's another one.
So his name is Abdullah Sharif. He used to go by the name of Double. So we connected, and then we thought, hey, as we are both Muslim, let's try and hit the Muslim market. So we went and we did some shows around the UK, and then we did Ihtikaf together. Mm-hmm. In a masjid.
Wow.
Local mosque in Birmingham. And then we met this Algerian brother, and he was kind of crazy but unique, and I thought, yo, we need this guy. And he said he can drum. And we thought, we can incorporate his drumming skills, we can sing and we can rap. And he did, and he brought a different dimension to the group. At the same time, we all learned how to play African drums. Mm-hmm. Specifically, it was the djembe.
Yeah.
And then we toured. We've been to over 20 countries.
Wow.
We had so much African drums. You know, the dun dun. I can't even remember the names. Wow. It was long ago. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
And then we toured with Sammy Youssef, Dawood Wansby, Zayn Bika, you know, the pioneers of the Nasheed industry.
Yes,
you know, and we were like the young guys, just excited to be around all these dudes. And and then after that, I took a break from it. Mm-hmm. I stepped away because I got to that age where I was like, yo, I need to find a real profession. You know, so I became a school teacher.
Right.
I've been doing that for the last 10 years.
Right.
But within teaching, while I was still teaching, I still had the fire inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can never take creativity out of somebody.
It's hard to get rid of it.
It is very difficult.
Yeah.
And I've got so much more to give. Mm-hmm. So Mu'adh is a singer who is a dear friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard he can sing. We set up a studio, and then he came in. I said, let's, I've got the experience. Let me share with you my experience and share the stage with yourself.
Right.
And then we did that. The first song we created is called It's Eid Today. And it was a great buzz. And that's the only song that we had. And we were getting booked by lots of people. So we would just turn up to the event and say, everyone just close your eyes and pretend it's Eid.
So you were doing it together with him, or he was the front artist, just behind the scenes?
No, we were doing it together.
You were doing it together, okay.
So he was singing, I was rapping.
Okay.
And you know, it was exciting. We toured, we did a lot of shows. then Outlandish reached out to us. Because a lot of people said, oh, you guys are UK version of Outlandish.
Right.
I was like, hey, it's cool because, you know, I love listening to these guys.
Sure.
So we did a UK tour with them, 10 City tour. That was like, for us, it was we felt like, yo, we're going places.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a lot of people getting in touch with us, especially record labels, saying you have a unique sound.
Mm.
We would love to take what you have and take it to the next level. I went to a few meetings with labels and I really didn't like the proposition and the contract, and I declined everything.
Really?
And I said to myself, listen, if all these guys see something in us, then we have to believe that we have something special.
Mm-hmm.
So at that moment, I realized, I said, Mu'adh, I'm stepping back. I've been doing this for many years. You're still fresh in the scene.
Mm.
I'm stepping back. I'm going to push you as a solo and I'll be behind the scenes. I don't want to be on stage no more.
Mm-hmm.
So created the organization called Brumero Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So we just tell stories through theater, music, and film. And we create music for lots of singers, do all the visuals. We push them out online. And it's been a year and a half now, and we've been doing, alhamdulillah, we've toured to a lot. Mu'adh toured a lot of different countries and did a lot of gigs in the UK.
Mm.
And then it allowed me to really focus on storytelling, because I've been writing stories for the last 15 years.
Right.
I think I've written over 1,000 stories.
Wow.
I didn't know what I'm writing them for. But now I know. At the time, I didn't know why I'm writing this story or what's the purpose of this story. But now when I'm looking through my notebooks, I understand it was all meant to... I understood that this is... It's all meant to be for this moment to create. What we did was we created the first ever Nasheed musical theater.
Right, I saw that, and
So just before that, when I was teaching, I really got frustrated with the policies and the way the system was the whole thing really frustrated me. So I walked away from teaching, and as soon as I walked away, I wrote the play. And I went and...
What was it called, the play?
Eid with the Neighbors.
Eid with the Neighbors.
So it was a two-hour Nasheed musical.
Mm.
So because I'm around so many artists, I thought, hey, I can utilize their skills and bring some actors and create something that maybe, you know, the Muslims haven't seen in the UK before, because we're just used to Nasheed singers coming on stage. So we toured with an organization called Penny Peel.
Mm-hmm.
The first year we did a 3-city tour, which was sold out. The second year we did a 6-city tour, which was 9 shows, which was earlier this year. And we're just writing, the whole team is just writing. Everyone's getting really creative.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's enjoying the buzz. And especially like Mu'adh, he's a solo singer, and all the other guys that we work with, they're enjoying the limelight because they're new to this. But to me, it's like
you're reliving the past.
I'm reliving, like, people, like, I'm supporting Mu'adh on stage and people are like, yo, you're amazing. I'm like, no, Mu'adh was great. I'm just there just to support the guy.
Yeah,
you know, for me it's all about telling different stories, different perspective of stories from the Muslim community and creating it into a different art form.
So what's the big difference you've seen? Because obviously at one point you were kind of, you just say, in front of the camera. Now you're more behind the camera, behind the scenes. What's the major difference you've seen doing it once on your own, being able to be the artist, the guy in the light, and now helping to support those talents? What do you find to be the big difference between the two?
For me, it's like, this is where I'm at. This is my purpose, because I'm actually given all of the tools and the skills and I'm giving them everything for them to reach a certain level. I'm allowing these guys to develop, because I feel like if you're going to be an artist, you need to be the best artist.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just be a qari who wants to be a nasheed singer. You have to really put your full energy and your focus into it. So I'm supporting all these people. I'm investing. I'm spending so much time. I'm creating opportunities and bringing all the videographers together and the producers together and making everything easy for the artist, because back then it's complete, you understand?
Oh, yeah.
It was very expensive, very difficult. Now, if artists want to make songs, they're on the sheets with Bramera. The organization is Bramera,
right?
Entertainment. So if they want to make stuff with us, it costs peanuts, because we know exactly what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's like the bigger picture is, it's not me. It's the vision is creative education, mm-hmm. educating the next generation of Muslim kids.
Right.
You know, and that is the main purpose.
So being that you've already experienced a lot of that, you know, maybe someone like Mu'adh right now is experiencing many firsts, mm-hmm. you know, getting to travel, getting to perform in front of different audiences and crowds. Is there any advice you give him that you kind of learned from while you were first on the road, and you say, well, you know, stay away from this, do this, preparation, what to eat, you know, how to sleep, whatever. Are there any advices or tips that you'd offer him in advance?
Just have fun. Just enjoy this journey.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? And of course, when you're on tour, just eat salad.
Oh, yeah. You gotta be careful. You don't know where your food's coming from.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys can hear my voice. I don't normally sound like this, but I lost my voice because we did two shows yesterday and last night. I wasn't feeling too well. You know, I didn't eat salad.
So you should have followed your own advice.
Exactly. But I just tell people, listen, enjoy the journey,
mm-hmm.
and meet people, meet your fans, because these guys are looking up to you. You know, go out, meet them, respond to them, because who knows, your actions can save their life.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So they really need to understand this. And a lot of people just come in, they're doing it for the money, but they need to understand the bigger picture and the bigger vision. Mm-hmm. And then success will come. And it's, I keep, like, a lot of people, they just want to come. They think, oh, I'm going to be successful overnight.
Mm.
It don't happen. This is a marathon.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you, how long, you've been doing this for so long.
Very
huh?
long, yeah. Almost maybe, I've been performing professionally since I was 19. I'm 32 now. That's what, about 13 years?
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, and what they say is like, you will reach success if you put 10 years into your craft.
Yeah.
If you've not put in 10 years into your craft, you know, you're a nobody.
Mm.
You know, there's only a limited number of people who are going to be successful overnight.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just got to take your time.
Well, also, there's so many artists that I remember that don't exist today.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, and I'm sure you've seen that kind of natural progression. People are here today, gone tomorrow. I know that obviously social media has allowed that, you know, 15 seconds of fame to last a bit longer.
Yeah.
Right? And do you remember what it was like coming up without social media?
I just wish social media was popping back then.
I know.
Do you understand? It's so difficult.
Yeah. It was extremely difficult then.
Yeah.
I mean, to get notoriety. I think the best tool that I probably had was YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube is what really helped me push the international boundaries. I had some buzz and notoriety in Canada, locally, in my city, in Toronto. But obviously, as an artist, trying to tap into the mainstream, you know, even as mainstream artists, you need press, you need, you know, they spend a lot of money on press junkets, you need TV appearances, radio, right? All that stuff goes into helping build a portfolio that people can say, oh yeah, I saw this person on this channel, or I saw them there.
And it requires a big team.
It does.
A lot of people.
It does.
Now all you need to do is just grab your phone and just sing.
Yeah, now you can go viral. Exactly. Off your phone.
Like, I find all the people who I work with, I find them all on Instagram. Mm. I worked with a guy from Belgium. I flew him to Birmingham, and now he lives there. And we create all their music. There was another female from Malaysia, you know, resided in Australia. She came to the UK,
mm-hmm.
created all the music. And all these guys, I just find them on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, so I just feel like if you have a talent, if you got something to say, Instagram, Facebook, social media, that's the way forward, because you're going to captivate an audience.
No, I don't want to sound like the old grouch, but you know, like back in my day, things. But do you find like the artists today are a little bit, I don't know what the word would be, maybe a bit more spoiled, or they don't necessarily appreciate the access they have to audiences?
Yeah, big time. They feel like...
They feel very entitled.
Yeah,
I'm speaking out loud. You tell me if you disagree. I find a lot of them, they feel like, you know, people will be performing for like a year or less, And they will ask themselves, you know, why aren't I headlining? Why aren't I the you know, the main performer? I had a video that had, you know, 100,000 views or whatever. And they go to an event like this or other conferences or big platforms, and they ask themselves, you know, why is this person there? Why am I not there?
You see, the thing is, yeah, my policy is if you work with Bremero for the first 12 months, we do not get you any gigs, because you have to create songs. What the hell are you going to go? What song are you going to sing when you're on stage? Hmm. You know, you can't. You want to go on and you're going to sing the best songs. Do you understand? So for the first year, we don't get them shows. And then they feel like, I'm spending all this time, or there's all these gigs and concerts. Why am I not on there? Hmm. Why is that artist on there? Because they've been doing it longer than you have.
Right.
They're more established. And then they feel like, oh, I can do this on my own.
Mm.
And then they go and try and create opportunities for them. But then they realize, yo, it's just going to come back and smack them in the ass. Smack them.
Oh, you can say whatever you want. This is a not PG-13 rated halal podcast. So
yeah, man. So it's just going to, you know, it's going to come back to them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like, I was chatting to a few people the other day, and I was like, yo, there's only a few individuals who, when we started, who are still doing it.
Yeah.
There's yourself, Muslim Bilal.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking about the urban artists.
Our crew.
Our crew and myself.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them who came and they disappeared. And all these new ones turned up and they disappeared. And people got to understand, you cannot just be a singer in the nasheed industry.
Mm-hmm.
You have to offer so much more.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you're going to become a nasheed singer, you need to have a full-time job.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, if there's something that can kind of compensate those losses in the beginning you might take. Because you might not be getting paid a lot. You might not obviously have a lot of events.
Exactly. Because it takes time. It takes time. It's a marathon. Mm. And my advice, all these up-and-coming nasheed singers, they just need to take some advice from people who've been in the scene or people who've been in the industry for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's in it for themselves and they feel like, yo, I know everything.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a real shame because the main purpose why we're doing this is not for your success. It's not for my success. It's actually for seeing the youth, you know, just giving a voice to the youth and just seeing them, seeing the next generation. You just got to be a positive role model for the next generation, because I believe there's not enough of us.
Mm.
I don't see myself as a positive role model.
Mm. Why not? Are you a negative role model?
No.
No, you're a positive role model. Okay. Why would you say that?
No, in terms of, because I'm behind the scenes.
Right.
I want to help create
sure.
the next generation of Muslim
role models. But you have also a profile. People know you. I mean, you're not like super behind the scenes.
No, of course not. Yeah. Like if someone wants me to jump on stage with them, I'll get on stage. I'll hype the crowd up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
And also you have the theater stuff as well. So you are, in a sense, you're still on the stage.
I'm still on this. I'm just trying to create different opportunities and different... Right. Markets for the Muslims to enjoy,
right?
Because you know, there's lots of different forms of creativity. It's not singing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's singing, there's theater. There's a lot of people just do spoken word, and then there's singing.
Yeah, I remember actually one of the first times I came to Birmingham, your city,
your city,
represent, right? All my Brummies out there listening. I remember one of the first times I came to Birmingham. Actually, Rehan brought me out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I performed at one of the universities. I think it was, might have been Birmingham University. I can't remember. And I remember performing spoken word poetry. And at this point, I had already been working on my craft for years, right? Like, I performed for non-Muslims mainly. And now, performing for Muslims, the difference was I was more finely tuned. Like, I knew the craft a bit better.
Yeah.
And I remember performing for this Muslim crowd, and they just looked at me in awe, like, what? Like, what is he doing? Like, is he... And afterwards, the real question was, is he allowed to do this? Seriously, it was, are you allowed to rhyme words like that?
And you were just doing it a cappella.
Just a cappella, just spoken word poetry.
Man.
That's it. And the look of shock on their faces. Afterwards, people came up and asked me, brother, is this permissible? I heard this and that. They're big, you know, the big thing they always say is that, oh, you're imitating the kuffar.
Yes.
Right? And of course, this is...
Especially with the hand movements.
With the hand movements.
Yeah,
Only kuffar talk like this,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Right? And it's one of those things that definitely... I always mention this, and it's something that it's, you know... I feel like I've overstated, but you know, a lot of it has to do with anti-blackness, racism that's embedded within anti-blackness, because black culture inherently is evil according to some different cultures, right? Anything that is associated with black culture has some type of, you know, they're like the extreme kuffar, like we really don't want to be like them, right?
Yeah.
So that's a different discussion. But what I found it more interesting was that now, like 10 years later, when I look back and I see, for example, all the Muslim spoken word artists that exist today, and I think to myself, man, you guys don't know the struggle I had to go through.
Of course.
Now you guys are out here doing your thing, you're performing, enjoying the life.
It's
easy. Wallahi, it's easy. There's so many people I had to convince. I had to beg and plead and be like, hey, look, this is okay. Let's go to the Quran. We'll go to the Sheikh. Let's ask, you know?
You see, you did it with just a cappella. We did it with drums.
I can only imagine what you guys might have to deal with.
And it's like, what would happen is people, I've had times where I'm performing at the event and then the Sheikh would walk in and they turn the sound system off. Do you understand? Or they turn the music, the volume of the microphone down all the way. And it's like, why? Why are you doing this?
Mm.
You know, you got to appreciate art. You got to appreciate the artist. And I also believe a lot of these organizations who have all these entertainers, they don't care about them. They don't show them love. They don't show them the appreciation. They just be like, hey, we just need an entertainer. Come on stage. Do you know what I mean? We have a slot. We'll bring you on. And the main focus is not you.
Right.
The main focus is trying to raise a hell of a lot of money for, you know, I've got known for a certain cause, which is great. Do you understand? But I feel like there's a time and a place. Entertainment, it needs to be its own form.
Right.
And then there's, you know, just then there's the other side to it. Do you know what I mean?
But you know what's strange in the Muslim art scene? Somehow, charities have become intertwined with Islamic art.
But bruv, charities are the record labels.
They are.
They run the nasheed industry.
They do.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
And it's a real shame.
Yeah. But talk to me about that. I mean, how did that come about? I remember when, you know, we used to charge admission. You charge £5, £10, whatever. People come in the door. You know, you don't make a lot, but you know, that's how the money came in. Now it's literally, okay, the charity's going to pay for everything.
Yeah.
And right, but they're going to squeeze the hell out of anyone who's in that room. Get them on a monthly payment. Get their card details and everything. Right? When did that transition happen?
I think from the start. I think it was from the start. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, we all... From the start, when I started, all I knew was, yo, charities are the ones who are holding these concerts. Do you know what I mean? We need to know the people within this charity, within that charity. Do you know what I mean? They're doing what they do.
Right.
You know what I mean? They have to get the numbers. Do you know what I mean? And I mean, it's frustrating because, you know, an artist, they want to perform and they have Auntie G sitting at the front. She ain't got a clue who the guy is. She ain't got a clue what the guy is saying.
Yeah.
But she just turned up because the charity has contacted them, contacted the family.
Sent her a text message or an email. And
an
said,
email to come through.
Please come through, yeah.
You know, but there's not a... People don't turn up just for entertainment. They come for, you know, for the food.
Yeah.
For the food, mainly.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to fundraising, people try and sneak out.
Right.
Which is not ideal. I feel like we have to have our own festivals.
A Muslim art festival.
Just a Muslim art festival.
With no charity involvement.
No charity.
I don't know if that'll ever happen. The charities to me have become like the mafia. You know, you have like in the American mafia, they have like the five families. We have like, I'm not going to say any names because they're all close friends of mine. I love them all, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to get in trouble with charities, I'll tell you that much, right? But it's like, they all have their own little niches, their own little areas of expertise and focus. And a lot of times they will find an artist or discover an artist and they will, you know, take that person on the road and they're really milking that person's social media presence to say, look, you know, this person's going to be featured here. Let's see how many people we can get. My only fear is that a lot of times it almost feels like these charities have no sense of a moral compass. It doesn't really matter who that person is. Like if a Dajjal came tomorrow and said, hey, I'm ready to tour, they'd be like, all right, like, well, I'm sure we can get a big crowd.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's about getting bums in a seat.
That's all.
Right? It's about how many people can we get in a room and how many people can we milk for fundraising. And of course, the psychology of it is, you know, okay, well, they're raising funds to help people over, you know, overseas, doing, you know, people that are in immense need. But obviously we understand that many of them operate like a business as well.
Yeah.
Every business has its quota, its yearly, quarterly quota. This is how much money they need to make. So in many ways, their intention, you know, and of course Allah knows their intentions, but if their intentions are even minutely not 100%, we're all going to suffer. Yeah. Right, because they will bring the same people over again. They will bring such and such cricket player, yeah, or such and such Bollywood star, or such and such person that has very little Islamic value.
Yeah.
Right. But it's literally this
person. As long as that person can attract people to sit down,
yep,
that's all that matters.
Yeah.
You know, but then again, it's like the child, they get creative as well. It's like they host various different types of events.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Again, just to bring people to sit down. But being an artist, being someone who creates and is behind the scenes, I would like to see a lot more Islamic festivals around the world.
UK charities are very crafty, though. I'm pretty sure all charities learn from the UK. Because the UK, there's so many Islamic charities in the UK.
Yeah.
That, and, you know, it's really like that type of pressure builds or creates innovation, like innovation in the good sense, right? That people are constantly figuring out different ways or techniques to attract people. But do you find it to be such that without charities, people would still be exposed or be willing to pay to come and experience art?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't. There needs to be a lot more, there needs to be actually a lot more different types of events. Do you know what I mean? It's like people don't really have a specific Muslim Nasheed artist that they follow. Do you know what I mean? It's mainly the young kids.
Right.
The younger generation. You know, they turn up and they start screaming. And a lot of these organizations don't want to be part of this. Do you know? But hopefully we'll see. We'll see. You know, 15 years ago, we were struggling.
Yeah.
Look where we are now.
Yeah.
You know, in the next 15 years, who knows, man? We'll hold big, big festivals all over, you know?
But how do we do that without charities? How do we get away from them? I mean, not to say there's anything bad. Like, I essentially understand the purpose of Islamic charities. I'm not debating that. I think they're great. They do great work. I've visited sites of many of these different places. But I'm talking about this very strange marriage between art and charity.
The charity's always going to be there.
But it wasn't always there before.
From when I started, yeah, they were there.
I think there was a time, a very small window of time.
But if it's, say, for instance, in Canada, they support a lot of Islamic organizations and Islamic festivals. Some, you know, in America, they do the same thing. If there's investment, if there's the government support, then yes, you know, we will be able to see a lot of these events happening.
Do you ever think there will come a day when Islamic organizations or masajid will fundraise to put money in a bank or an account to support or foster Muslim talent or Muslim arts? Do you ever think that
happen? I would love to see something like that.
Like a awqaf for like arts and culture.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see that. And I believe, like, check this out, yeah? Now there's a lot of young, energetic, creative individuals that have fire inside of them. Do you know what I mean? And they're creating great content. And they're going to create their own market. There's going to be people who are going to get involved. Like, you know what? You are amazing talent. We need to get you on tour. But we can create our own tours. There's artists who are blacklisted by charities.
Really?
In the UK. Artists from around the world.
Why is that?
Because they attract a certain type of audience where kids are just enjoying themselves. You know, screaming.
Girls are throwing their hijab on stage.
And you know the brothers, you know the older brothers, they don't understand us. They don't understand the younger generation because when our families came to the West, you know, my parents, your parents, they came to America, UK, and Canada, and in Europe, they established masajid. They built communities. They set up halal restaurants and butchers and the community structure was solid. Do you know what I mean? And then they were so busy focusing on the community. And then they had kids. And their kids were like, hey, we have everything. We're chilling, you know? Let our parents do everything. We're just going to have fun. And then it comes to our generation. And we're like, yo, you got the older generation who don't relate to us. Everything is halal. Everything's haram. But we, and then the generation above us, they're completely silent, completely invisible. So we grew up not knowing where to go. Is this right? There was not enough guidance. So because we've experienced the struggle, we're trying to give the youth the opportunity to focus and live righteously and to understand, you know, just to live a positive life. So we're trying to become positive role models. So it's just that gap. And I just hope there's no more generation gaps, you know?
Well, I hope. I mean, between, like, you have children, I have children. Between myself and my children, there's much less of a cultural gap.
Yes.
Right? Like, they are essentially Canadian in the same way that I was essentially Canadian. I was born here. They're born here. Language, culture. You know, even though my wife is Eritrean, I'm Oromo from Ethiopia. You know, our cultures are very similar anyways. But, I mean, externally, there isn't really much difference between... you know, us and your children, obviously now British, Sudanese, but British essentially,
of course,
right?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we should embrace, right? Why should we, you know, hide from that? Why? I think there's this, you know, it's a notion that, oh, this is the land of the kuffar, this is a land of non-Muslims, or, you know, we can't adopt their culture, but it's like, hey, dude, it's too late. You brought us here, we're invested in society. When we want the best for the people around us as well, we want the society to flourish, we want our homes to be the best possible places, right? We don't want to throw trash on our front lawns. So I think maybe for our kids' generation,
it's going to be easier.
I hope. Inshallah. Like, the way in which they're going to be brought up and raised, you know, I hope your children are confidently British, Muslim, Sudanese, whatever, but confident in who they are, right? And I think that's the thing that our generation kind of lacked a little bit, that confidence in the sense of, you know, are you really truly British? Am I really truly Canadian?
I was lost when I was growing up. I'm Sudanese. In Birmingham, there's not many. There's not much of a big
You're Sudanese. Very, very rare, yeah.
Yeah, not much of a big Sudanese community. So going into college, I'm like, okay, so I got the black crew. Okay, I can relate to them. I've got the Arabs. I speak Arabic. I can relate to them. I got the Pakistanis because I'm a Muslim. I've got the Africans because I'm Sudanese and I'm African. And I'm standing in the middle. I'm like, hey, who do I join? And then I'm just like dipping in. And I felt lost. Didn't really have a real connection with Sudan, you know, only recently.
Sudan, you know, Sudanese, I realize that about Sudanese people, that they can really pass in many different circles. I didn't realize that. But by the way, this is completely random, off topic. But over the years, like always, my best friends have always been Sudanese. Wallahi, I'm attracted to Sudanese people. They are, I think, one of the best groups of people.
You look like us, man.
Wallahi, I could pass as Sudanese. Of course, right? Sometimes I go places with people, but that's besides the point. I noticed that Sudanese, obviously, they're considered to be Arab, right? African, but sometimes not East African enough for some East Africans.
Yeah.
Right? Obviously, you know, having Arabic on your tongue, you know, gives you that sense of confidence around maybe non-Arabic speakers.
Yeah.
So you can pass in Muslim circles very closely. But I find like that, you know, being Sudanese must be a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah. You attract so many people.
Yeah.
Do you understand? And it's like, especially when you're living in the West, you don't really feel like you are British or you are American. You feel like, yes, I'm still connected to Sudan, but at the same time, I've not embraced the full culture because I'm still trying to find who I am.
Right.
Because am I an Arab? Am I African? Am I British? And that really plays, it really does mess up with your head. And I've spoken to a hell of a lot of Sudanese people.
Right.
And everyone has the same...
I can imagine.
Same, you know.
It's a very unique position to be in. I bet most times people are just like, oh, he looks Somali.
All the time.
That's it. They just round it off. Because I think there's a lot of the Somali diaspora, obviously, is very large.
Yeah.
So we just kind of get swallowed in. You just get rounded off within it.
I mean, at the beginning, it's like when Somalis came to the UK... I was like, they used to come and speak to me in Somali. And I was like, brother, no, I'm sorry. I'm from Sudan. Now, I just like, hey, you know, I don't even care. If someone says, you Somali? I'm like, Bismillah. We're East African, you know? We all look the same.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Alhamdulillah.
I mean, it's funny. Like, obviously, we look the same to a lot of outside. I can kind of tell who's who.
I can tell. Oh, from a mile
you,
away.
You don't look Somali to me.
Nah?
No, you don't. No, you don't. You look Sudanese. You look Sudanese, or you could also be Eritrean. Maybe like a dark-skinned Eritrean.
Listen, Habibi, I had everything. I had Bengali.
Whoa.
I had someone say, are you...
Someone needs to check their glasses,
I think. Someone say, I'm Bengali. Someone say, I'm Jamaican. Some idiot thought I was Chinese, just a black Chinese.
Black Chinese.
Because you got small eyes.
That's the first I ever heard of that.
I don't know, man.
That's the criteria. Just some small eyes and that's
it. Habibi, I think I was tired that day or something. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, man. SubhanAllah. How's the situation in Sudan right now?
Well, they ousted the president, so...
By the way, this news might be irrelevant by the time this thing gets out. But just for my own personal information.
It's stable.
It's stable. It's getting better, alhamdulillah.
It's getting better.
Sudan is a very beautiful country, man. Beautiful, I wish it all the best, subhanAllah.
I mean. You know, I hope people can actually live a peaceful life and enjoy life.
We're going to wrap up soon, inshallah. Any advice you have, obviously, again, back to, you know, you're an artist, you're kind of in the management field now. Any advice you have for upcoming artists, people that want to enter inside the field, people who maybe want to pursue a career in the arts in the future?
Take it slow. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint. Learn from the elders. Learn from people who've been in this game for a long time. Mm-hmm. Speak to people. Connect with a hell of a lot of people. And remember, you're doing this for a greater purpose, not just for yourself, not your voice. It's to empower the next generation of youth. Mm-hmm. And for me, this is the most important thing, because you got to teach them creatively. I'm a champion for creative education, 100%. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to die. You know, I'm not going to stop. Actually really, really pushing creativity in schools and in young kids. So I feel like just renew your intentions constantly, know exactly what you're doing it for, and enjoy the ride, because it's going to be a hell of a good journey. Do you know what
Inshallah.
I mean? And I know, I mean, we've had some good times.
Yes, we have.
And the best thing about it is, when you do it well, you'll have many friends all over the world.
Do you know what I mean?
Beautiful people, man. You know, alhamdulillah, because this world is a small place.
It is.
And people got to pick their bags and connect with people all over.
Mm-hmm.
So just enjoy this journey and have a great time, man. It's a marathon. Take it easy.
If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do so? Social media, Instagram, what's your...
So I'm on Instagram as Bustami. I am Bustami. That's spelled Bustami. It's a very unique name. It's my father's name, and I've kind of adopted that name.
Bustami means what? It's like gardener?
No, that's Bustani.
Bustani, okay, Bustani. Yeah, so Bustami is just a family name.
Bustami, it comes from a place in Persia, in Iran, from the city of Bustam.
Okay.
And it's predominantly a name used in Indonesia, Malaysia, Jordan.
Okay.
Not for Sudanese.
I think
my granddad had a great he had a good sense of humor.
MashaAllah. So people can find you online, and definitely, you know, support the brother. Hopefully, inshallah.
Just before that,
go ahead.
Find me online under Bustami, but we are on the Brimero Entertainment.
How do you spell that?
Brimero.
What does that stand for, Brimero?
So basically, Primero means in Latin is the leader, the chief, the one. And I was like, hey, the industry I'm in is for the Muslims and the Arabs, but they can't pronounce the P. So we went with Brimero.
Brimero. Okay. Very good.
Yeah, man.
And inshallah, your play, hopefully, inshallah, you know, the theater, that could be, hopefully we can bring that different parts of the world.
We're writing constantly.
Have you had a chance to present Eid with the Neighbors?
Yeah, so we've done it in the UK. We're going to take it international once a year, just straight after Eid. We're writing various different plays and different stories, working with different organizations. So inshallah, Brimero Entertainment will be in your city very soon, man.
Inshallah. By the way, my background is in theater.
Yo, man.
This is how I got started. So yeah. Hey, I'm saying, if you need a Sudanese lookalike, you need some brothers standing in the background. You know what I'm saying? I got you.
Let's do this, man.
Inshallah. Jazakallah khair, Habibi, for joining us.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it,
inshallah.
Man.
Thank you for everyone watching. Inshallah, you enjoyed this. Like it, share, subscribe, whatever you guys got to do. Inshallah, get the message out, and we'll hopefully see you on another episode of What the Fiqh. Bona Muhammad signing out. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.